Our text for this morning is John 1, 9 through 14. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of a human's decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. There's a story about a boy who went with his family to view one of those life-size manger scenes, nativity scenes at a church. And he was getting excited, anxious to see the manger because that was the big attraction. And after much anticipation, he actually decided, he just bolted, you know. He broke through the ropes, he ran to the manger, and he just stood there stunned because in the manger there was just a doll. In his disappointment, he grabbed the doll and held it up and said, "It's a fake. It's not real." There's another story a lot like it. It takes place in one of those public squares where they have different religious scenes. And a child does the same thing. He goes past the ropes. He goes to the manger scene. He looks in the manger. And again, he's alarmed. This time, there's no baby at all. The manger's completely empty. And I think the symbolism in those two stories is interesting. A church with a plastic Jesus and a culture with no Jesus at all. And the irony is not too difficult to imagine. We're much like those manger scenes, you and I. We spend an enormous amount of time, money, effort making ourselves look ready for Christmas. But for some reason, maybe in our hearts, the manger feels empty or Jesus doesn't seem real. You ever had a Christmas like that? Last week, I quoted the theologian Gerd Ludemann, who said, "Jesus' wretched tomb was full and his manger was empty." Now, we disagree with Mr. Ludemann. We don't believe it's a myth because we believe in God. We believe Jesus was physically raised from the dead and that someday we will be too. But what difference does that make today? Is that just our theology? Is that on those things that we believe, that list of things that we believe, or is it our life? Because it's possible to believe Jesus was born of God, but to feel like the manger is empty, to accept that Jesus is God's son, but to feel like he isn't real. When you look back on the years, if you look back on previous Christmases, and you look back on those years when Christmas just didn't measure up to what you had hoped, why was that the case? And I want to suggest three possibilities. I think first, it's possible to use decorations and all the other trappings of the holiday season to disguise the reality of an empty manger in our lives. Decorations can make everything look good on the outside, but hide the truth of what's going on in the heart. We're like the Clark Griswold character in Christmas Vacation. Lights his house, hosts the family meal, decorates the tree in hopes of having the best Christmas ever. But nothing works. Meal's a disaster, the decorations are a mess, his guests need a therapist instead of a party. His Christmas dream is more like a nightmare. And for us, though, that's not a comedy. The truth is that there may be some painful areas, like relational loss or career failings or feelings of fear and sadness we don't want to face. God feels far away. But we disguise our hurt with some lights, a few cookies and songs to make everything look okay, while in reality, our heart longs for God to be real and present in our circumstances. I want to ask you, are you doing that this Christmas? Are you using decorations in your life to disguise the reality that you're hurting, that your heart is lonely, that God feels different, and the manger feels empty? Second possibility, I think it's possible to use gifts as a substitute for an empty manger feeling in our hearts. Gift giving can be a way to make up for all the lousy stuff in our lives. Don't get me wrong, I love giving. I even love getting gifts. But gifts can be used to fill up feelings of sadness, loneliness, and emptiness. Maybe if I give enough things, or even do enough things, I can replace what's missing in the manger. Or we can go to the other extreme. We hope that maybe if we get the thing that we've always wanted, that will fill the manger and make this the best Christmas ever. Gift giving is an expression of the manger gift, but it's not a substitute for it. We give and receive not to replace God, but to reflect God. So let me ask you, are you using gifts and gift giving as a substitute for an empty manger feeling in your heart? It's possible. And if you are, you'll find you only get a cheap imitation of the real gift that God gave. I think there's a third possibility as to why the manger may feel empty to us at Christmas time. It's possible to substitute religious observances and traditions to manufacture a meaningful manger experience. We can have all the religious stuff in our lives and it will never fill the manger with Jesus. We can't fake knowing Jesus. And all the religious songs, all the church attendance, all the external acts of faithfulness will never make up for not having the real thing, the real Jesus in our lives. We become like those children anxiously waiting in line to see a nativity scene. And just like them, we get past the ropes and we discover the manger is empty, or we're holding a fake Jesus. Our faith feels faked, and Jesus feels different, distant. So how do you experience the real thing? How do you put Jesus back in the manger in your heart? How does the Word became flesh? How does that feel to you personally? How does Jesus become as real to you as the person sitting next to you this morning? How does the miracle of the incarnation lead to an authentic faith? I think there are clues to these questions in the biblical story of the birth of Jesus. Those who missed the baby and those who got to see the baby. You see, in the Christmas story, Herod the Great, the townspeople of Bethlehem, and the religious leaders in Jerusalem never got to see Jesus. For them, it didn't even happen. And why was that? You would think they would have gotten to see the baby, the incarnation of God. Herod had the power, the townspeople had the location right, and the religious leaders had the scriptures. But in the Gospels, it was some foreigners, the Magi, a few shepherds, and an old man named Simeon who got to see Jesus. Why? They seemed to be unlikely characters to see the infant king. The Magi were outsiders by race and profession. The shepherds were despised as the lowest of the classes and as ceremonial lawbreakers. And who was Simeon? Just an old man who hung out at the temple so much he practically lived there. Yet when we compare the two sets, I believe we discover something about how to experience the presence of Jesus in the manger in our lives, where faith is real and relating to God is genuine. First, compare King Herod with the Magi. Both are powerful. Both are wealthy. Both have the means to reach Jesus. The story is found in Matthew 2, verses 1 through 12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way. And the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. So think about the contrast here. Herod sent someone else. The Magi wanted to go for themselves. They came a great distance to go themselves. The Magi are following God's leading, looking for God's leading, and willing to follow. Herod is listening to men, listening to his advisors. Herod wants to take something from Jesus. The Magi want to give him something. And from King Herod and the Magi, I think we make the first discovery. If we'll let go of our pride, we'll be set free to begin a journey to see Jesus. Herod's power and control paralyzed him. His idol was himself, and it made him afraid of being demoted by the true king. And as long as we refuse to take ourselves off the throne of our hearts, we will never have Jesus there. He won't fit there. Because of the darkness of Herod's pride, he could never take the first step towards seeing the true light that was coming into the world. To quote C.S. Lewis, pride is a spiritual cancer. It eats up the very possibility of love or contentment or even common sense. Pride. Herod's pride, his hold on his power, his desire to continue to hold on to his power, kept him from the very possibility of seeking and meeting the Son of God, because it would mean admitting that he was not the center of the universe. His anger, driven by his pride, led to a senseless act of violence. Our pride will do the same to us. It'll keep us from even attempting to experience the love and contentment of Jesus. Pride is the cause of many senseless things in our lives. We destroy our marriages, our finances, our careers because we refuse to listen to good counsel. We ruin our health. We seek revenge rather than imparting forgiveness. We live in bitterness because of our pride. The Magi seem to live up to their reputation as wise men. They too had power, yet they came humbly. They let go of their pride and the idols that they had worshipped. They were honest seekers who were not threatened like Herod by the arrival of this proclaimed king. If it meant worshiping Jesus rather than the stars, so be it. Their humility set them free to be on a journey to meet Jesus. You know, there's something liberating about letting go of the idols in our lives and admitting that we are not the true king of the world. Is that you today? If we would set aside our pride and power and lay down control of our lives, we would begin our journey to see the true king as well. That's our first discovery. The second discovery is found in the next set of individuals we want to compare in the story. They're the townspeople and the shepherds. These are the regular people. They have the stories and tradition that would lead right to where Jesus would be born. And the scholars quoted it. They have the same Bibles. They have the stories and the traditions. Again, the contrast is striking. How did a few shepherds make it to the manger in the middle of a whole town that didn't make it, that had no idea it was happening? The whole town was right next to the baby. Luke 2 verse 4, you could even say they were surrounding him. They were so close. The shepherds, on the other hand, not only got to see the baby, they got a divine invitation to the manger. Now I think from this contrast we make our second discovery. We may need to let go of our preconceptions of God in order to find the manger. You see, the town had different expectations for Jesus. They didn't really want a feeding trough. They wanted a palace. They didn't want a baby. They wanted a king. They wanted a conquering king, the leader of armies. They wanted God on their terms to validate what they wanted. The shepherds, on the other hand, had no expectations at all. They were willing to meet God on his terms. True faith, real faith, is all about trusting God's way of doing things. This may be my greatest struggle, personally. I like to think I have a pretty good handle on what I need. Do you? You have a pretty good handle on the things you need? God knows better. And he says, trust me, I know what I'm doing. I know what you need. You may think you want a politically, economically, or culturally, or even militarily powerful king. That may be what you think you want, like the townspeople want it. When what you really need is a good shepherd whose supernatural power transcends worldly systems. The manger is saying to us, give up your expectations. Have faith in my coming as a child. Trust me, and you will find the manger. I know it's hard to give up those expectations of what we want from God, the things that we truly desire from God. We want a job. We want a spouse. We want healing. My first job out of college, I was a youth minister in the small town in Texas, Stephenville, Texas. It was an interesting group. In my youth group, about half the members of my youth group were residents at a Christian children's home, a lot like Child Place or Potter's. In my first winter there, I asked the junior high class one Sunday morning to share what they wanted most for Christmas. Well, at first, the replies were pretty typical for 1984. A stereo system, a watch, a bicycle, junior high class. But as they thought about the question, what did they most want for Christmas, the replies got progressively more serious until one young girl from the children's home said, I want God to make my parents love me and come take me home. We got a chance to talk later in private. I said, you know, I'll pray with you that God will soften your parents' hearts. I don't think God will make anybody do the right thing. But I can tell you this for sure. You are precious to God. And he's a father you can count on. He'll never leave you. He'll never abandon you. You see, God says we can count on his love. He says, trust me. Psalm 37, 4 through 6 says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him. And he will do this. He will make your righteousness shine like the dawn, the justice of your cause like the noonday sun. And Jesus said in Matthew 6:33, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. And what we need to do is set aside our preconceptions of how God ought to be in order to find the manger. The second discovery, the final characters in the story, the religious leaders and Simeon, lead us to our third discovery. The religious leaders, of all people, should have been able to find Jesus, but they never received him. John 1, verse 11, we read, he came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Instead, they were blinded by their own priorities. For them, religion was a source of good values and good morals, and it upheld the political, economic, and social structures of their society. It was kind of the foundation of those things. And most of all, it supported their own advantageous position of wealth and power and prestige. There was no true love for God in them. So they never even recognized his son when he showed up. The very Messiah that they had taught about and said that they longed for, when he came, they didn't even know him. Simeon, on the other hand, was an elderly man who went to the temple regularly. He was rewarded for his authentic devotion to God with a promise that he would see the Messiah before his death. Simeon was one of those who were known as the quiet in the land. You know, we got a lot of quiet in the land who, unlike the religious elite, relate to God personally and intimately. Luke 2, verse 22, 25 and following says, there was a man in Jerusalem called Simeon who was righteous and devout. He was waiting for the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Moved by the Spirit, he went into the temple courts. When the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what the custom of the law required, Simeon took the baby in his arms and praised God, saying, Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace. For my eyes have seen your salvation, which you prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people, Israel. From Simeon, compared to the religious elite, we make our final discovery. Christianity is not a system. It's not an economic system. It's not even a system of morals and values. Christianity is a relationship that leads to a distinctive lifestyle. Christians are followers, disciples of Jesus Christ. That's what Christians are. And coming to Jesus changes us. For the Magi, they worshiped Jesus. That's what happens when you lay down your pride and let go of your idols. You get the thing that deserves your worship. You know, on a recent trip to Israel, we saw a lot of pilgrims on that trip. I went up on the Temple Mount to that Dome on the Rock, and there were Muslims who had come from around the world to be there and worship at that holy place to them. And there was a washing station set up in front of it. And they were down in this washing station taking off their feet, their shoes and socks, and washing their feet and washing their hands and bowing down on their knees and praying, preparing themselves to go into this holy place and be close to God. And then, you know, we went down to the Western Wall. And there were Jewish pilgrims from all over the world who had come to go to the Western Wall, the very presence of God. And they were, you could feel their excitement and their energy as they prayed and bowed and went to the wall and put their prayer slips in that wall. And they would back away from the wall without turning their faces from it. It represented the very presence of God. In fact, there's a sign that warns you, be respectful. This is the seat of God's presence. And then we went to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and there were Catholic pilgrims that were there from all over the world. And they came in into this beautiful old building, more than 1,000 years old. And there was an altar there, and they kneeled down, and they were kissing it, and they were praying, and tears were running from their cheeks because they felt like they were approaching God in a special way. All three groups were obviously excited. They were emotional about being there. They obviously believed they were closer to God there than anywhere else. But the Magi, they were pilgrims. They followed their star a great distance, and they found far more tangible success. I can't imagine how they felt. Matthew 2, verse 11, on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They found the actual baby. They found what they had traveled miles and miles and miles and miles to see and to worship. And what a tremendous gift it was to have that opportunity to come close to God and worship. I can tell you where I feel closest to God. Right here with you. God's people, the Holy Spirit indwells amidst of God's people. This is for me the holiest place to be here with you. Although everywhere any of us goes, Jesus is with us. He dwells inside us, and it's a holy place. We are a sacred space everywhere we are. But I feel especially close to God here. The shepherds, too, when they saw Jesus, when they saw the baby, when they had this experience, they left dancing and praising. That's what happens when you let go of your expectations. God will exceed them. Luke 2:20, the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they heard, all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. Their desires were fulfilled beyond their wildest dreams. They were honored in such an incredible way to get to see the Messiah, the promised Messiah. And so they glorified and praised God. Simeon, he got to hold the baby who was coming to save the world. The Word became flesh. And the Word becomes flesh in our lives when we acknowledge Christ as our personal Lord. And truly become his follower, his disciple, and align our lives with his teachings, with his leading, and follow in his steps. Faith will be real. Jesus will be on that manger in our hearts. I wonder how those stories we started with the children at the life-size nativity displays. How those stories would have ended if when they rushed up and they went to the manger, there was a real baby in those mangers. We're always shocked to meet life when we think there isn't any. Let me invite you to break through the ropes and run to the manger this Christmas and discover Emmanuel. God is there. God is present. God is alive. He's present. The Word became flesh and made His dwelling among us. We have seen His glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth.